Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Jill Robbins, John Russell, Anna Mateo, and Anne Ball. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us America's Presidents. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
Darshana Kapoor walked near the riverbank after swimming in the Ganges River in Haridwar town. It is one of the most important places for the Hindu religious group in India. But the ritual bath was not a good experience for Kapoor. My faith brought me here, but when I saw garbage floating in the river, I felt so bad. I had to scrub myself, she said. Kapoor is not alone in her opinion. The Central Pollution Board has said that the water of the Ganges River at Haridwar is not fit for bathing. The river's condition disappoints thousands of people who come to the town. They were hoping to see results from a $3 billion cleanup project launched by Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The Ganges River starts in the Himalayan mountains, but those cold, clean waters become polluted as they travel through the plains of North India. Garbage, untreated sewage, and industrial waste are the main causes of the damage.
It is a big concern because the river provides water for 400 million people. For over 30 years, the government has been trying to clean up the river. After becoming Prime Minister in 2014, Modi admitted the cleanup failure and promised to succeed where earlier governments had not. But 3 years after his promise, environmental activists say that the river is still dying. The National Green Tribunal is India's main environmental court. In July, it criticized the government, saying, "The status of the river Ganga has not improved in terms of quality, and it continues to be a serious environmental issue." The court banned dumping waste within 500 meters of the river. It also said that no development should be permitted within 100 meters of the river as it flows between Haridwar and the town of Unnao. They are almost 500 kilometers apart. However, environmental activists point out that court orders do not always have an effect.
The main challenge is the slow pace of setting up treatment centers. About three-quarters of the sewage generated in the towns and cities in the northern plains flows untreated into the Ganges. Ganesh Singh owns a shop along the riverbank in Haridwar. He said, "There have been efforts to educate the people about not dumping waste into the river. Many polythene bags, bottles, garbage used to be thrown into the river earlier. It is better now," he said. He was happy the river helps bring in more tourists.
However, just a few meters down from his shop, piles of garbage dumped along the riverbank were getting slowly washed into the water with the rain. Mehta worries that leaders do not care enough about the issue. This month, Modi gave responsibility for the Ganges cleanup campaign to a top cabinet minister, Nitin Gadkari. Gadkari is known for completing tasks. Devotees and environmentalists are hoping that will happen. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
In the United States, September is Suicide Prevention Month. The World Health Organization says that every year, about 800,000 people commit suicide around the world. September 10th was International Suicide Prevention Day. To mark that day in 2017, the WHO stressed the important part that the media can play in stopping people from taking their own lives. The WHO reports that for every suicide, 20 other people attempt to take their own lives. These people are mostly young. The WHO says suicide is the second leading cause of death among people aged 15 to 29 years. The health organization also finds most suicides, more than 78%, happen in low and middle-income countries. Issues that put people at risk include mental problems, as well as depression and anxiety resulting from alcohol use. The WHO also states growing evidence shows that the media can play an important role in preventing suicide. The role media can play is to responsibly report on the problem. Alexandra Fleischman is a scientist in the WHO's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. Fleischman tells VOA that people are often unwilling to talk about suicide because of the stigma. She says journalists can help to overcome this taboo by encouraging people to seek help and to speak openly about their distress.
It is also important to stress that the encouragement to work with the media and not just to talk about the don'ts. Don't put it in the headline, don't put the picture of the person who died, don't sensationalize it, don't glamorize it.
The WHO also warns that when the media reports on suicide in an exciting or attractive way, it may put others at risk. I'm Anna Mateo.
Most people do not have a high opinion of bats. Bats often appear in movies and literature as terrifying creatures to be avoided. The animals have even been linked in popular culture to vampires, seeking to attack and drink the blood of human victims. In reality, bats are usually not a threat to people. Like other wild animals, some bats can carry the dangerous virus rabies. But bats can do good things for people and the environment. For example, bats eat a lot of different insects that can harm our environment. They can also pollinate plants and spread seeds. But a serious disease is currently threatening the bat population in many parts of the United States. The disease is a fungus called white nose syndrome. It has killed more than 6 million bats across North America since 2007. Bats catch the fungus through their skin while resting on the walls of mountain caves. Biologist Lindsay Rohrbaugh says the disease spreads quickly and can lead to strange behavior in bats.
Bats are arousing more often than they're supposed to be during hibernation, and when they do that, they're unable to find food and they unfortunately die.
In Washington, D.C., researchers are studying how white nose syndrome is affecting the area's 9 species of bats. Some scientists are trapping bats on an island in the middle of the Anacostia River to test for the disease. The group is receiving federal money to help carry out their studies. Marco Carvello is with the D.C. government's Department of Energy and Environment. He says scientists are concerned that the disease is continuing to greatly reduce the bat population.
They typically have one pup a year when they reproduce. So that's another reason that white nose has been so detrimental. They don't have a lot of babies.
The bat deaths are affecting the quality of human life in many ways, according to Lindsay Rohrbaugh.
Without bats, we're seeing an increase in mosquitoes and other pests that are decimating food sources for us. And I think that's only going to get worse over time if we don't find some way to protect the species that we had left.
One theory is that some bats are no longer returning to caves to avoid getting sick. This means more of them are now making their way into cities, where contact with humans is more likely. Experts advise people to keep away from bats in case they are infected with rabies. Instead, they say animal control officers should be called to come and safely remove the animals. I'm Brian Lynn.
For the first time, researchers have identified six genes that control the length of a pregnancy. And they say the genes may show whether or not a baby will be born early. Preterm birth, when a baby is born too early, is a large cause of disability and death among the very young. 15 million babies worldwide are born too soon every year. Their lungs may be too small and undeveloped. They struggle to breathe. Many of them die. For those who survive, problems from being born too early can affect them all their lives. Preterm birth is the leading cause of death among children under the age of 5 years worldwide. A pregnancy normally lasts about 40 weeks. An infant is considered full term if the baby is born after 37 weeks in the mother's womb. One study found that a small number of babies born at just 22 weeks gestation have survived with medical treatment. But even late preterm babies are more likely to die or experience problems, even if they are the size and weight of some full-term infants. Late preterm babies are ones born between 34 and 36 weeks of gestation. Now, a number of researchers may have found a way to understand the causes of this complex disorder. The researchers looked at the genetic structure in 50,000 pregnant women. It was the largest study yet of DNA, or deoxyribonucleic acid. The study found six genes that seemed to control how long a baby would stay in the mother's womb. Dr. Louis Muglia is the co-director of the Perinatal Institute at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center in Ohio.
He helped organize the study and explains what the researchers found.
For the first time, we have the clues that are going to lead us to rational ways of understanding a woman's risk for preterm birth.
Dr. Muglia says scientists have known for a long time that preterm birth involves a combination of genetic and environmental causes. One of the newly identified genes is involved in how the body uses the mineral selenium. Selenium is found in soil, seafood, and meat. It is also sold in some stores, but not currently included in vitamin supplements women usually take while pregnant. Selenium supplements are low cost. If the results of the study are confirmed, this could save millions of lives. Supplements such as folic acid have been shown to greatly reduce birth defects. Folic acid, a B vitamin, is added to food in many countries to help prevent health problems. Another finding is that the cells lining a woman's uterus have a larger than expected influence on the length of pregnancy. The study showed that the genes thought to be responsible for the timing of the birth were from the mother.
For the first time, we have an idea of what tissue in the mom is the one that's likely driving the risk for preterm birth.
The March of Dimes provided money to help pay for the research. Stacy Stewart works with the nonprofit group.
We think this is an important breakthrough in finding solutions to end premature birth, which is the leading cause of death for children between the ages of 0 and 5 and the leading cause of disabilities for babies.
The study does not provide any immediate solution for stopping preterm birth, but the discoveries may lead to new ways to prevent this disorder. A final note. The researchers only tested women of European ancestry. They compared their findings to information from 3 different studies in Finland, Denmark, and Norway. The studies pointed to the same 6 genes. The next step is to expand the research to include women from other races and ethnic groups. I'm Ann Ball.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Calvin Coolidge. He was the vice president under Warren Harding. When Harding died suddenly, a little more than 2 years into his term, Coolidge became president. Coolidge is linked to 2 opposing ideas. The first idea is quiet restraint. The president's nickname was Silent Cal. He rarely took part in casual conversation. And as a leader, he often thought the best action was not to take any action. Many voters liked his cool style. Coolidge quickly earned a public image as a serious man who did not spend money or words easily. But Coolidge is also linked to a period in U.S. history known as the Roaring Twenties. In those years, the 1920s, the American economy was generally good. Many people spent money on exciting things, such as the still-new automobile, and on entertainment, including alcoholic drinks, cigarettes, and dancing. Creative expression, such as jazz and Art Deco architecture, became popular. Calvin Coolidge is often given credit for helping fuel the Roaring Twenties with his pro-business economic policies. But some historians caution against remembering Coolidge's business freedom policies too fondly. They say he helped create the conditions for the severe economic depression that followed his presidency. Calvin Coolidge and his sister were born and raised on a farm in the northeast state of Vermont. Coolidge spoke highly of both his parents. His father owned a store and also held local political offices. He had a public image for honesty, public service, and thrift. Young Calvin Coolidge helped his father in the store and hoped to be just like him. Coolidge also admired his mother's strong character. He was 12 years old when she died, and he wrote that losing her was the greatest grief that can come to a boy. 6 years later, his sister also died. Their deaths made young Calvin Coolidge even more serious than he already was. But Coolidge was also known for his wit, a kind of humor that often depends on wordplay or intelligence. As a student at Amherst College in Massachusetts, Coolidge became known as an able and funny public speaker. That skill helped him rise in politics. He began with lower-level offices in Massachusetts and later served as that state's governor. Along the way, he married Grace Anna Goodhue, a teacher for the deaf. She was known to be warm and social, and the couple were reported to have a loving marriage. They went on to have two sons. In 1920, the Republican Party nominated Coolidge to be its vice presidential candidate. In general, voters liked the Republican ticket. They were ready for a change after the reform policies and international engagement of Democrat Woodrow Wilson. Sure enough, the Republicans won the election in a landslide. But Coolidge did not enjoy the office of vice president very much. He had little power in the government. During meetings, he often remained silent. One summer night, he and his wife were on vacation in Vermont. His father, Colonel Coolidge, woke them up in the middle of the night with some dramatic news. President Harding had died. Reporters quickly gathered at the small farmhouse. Colonel Coolidge had not put electricity in the house, so everyone watched by the light of an oil lamp. Colonel Coolidge was a public official. He used the family Bible and a copy of the Constitution to swear in his son as the 30th U.S. president. Then the country's new leader did a very sensible thing. He went back to bed. President Coolidge believed in limited government, especially limited federal government. He permitted state and cabinet officials to decide as many issues as they could. Coolidge used his authority to focus mostly on the country's economy. At the time he took office, the U.S. was at the start of an economic boom. Coolidge tried to maintain that prosperity. He did not regulate businesses too much, and he sharply reduced taxes, especially on the wealthy. By nearly every measure, the economy grew. But the policies also widened the divide between rich and poor Americans and put the country's economy in a risky situation. More and more people began to invest their money in the stock market. Some put their dollars in dangerous investments. And business owners produced more goods than most members of the public could really afford. Increasingly, people borrowed money on credit to pay for luxury goods. At the same time, the economic situation of many American farmers was getting worse. The weather had been unusually dry in some places, and the price of food was falling. Farmers asked the federal government for assistance. But Coolidge rejected several bills that might have helped them. The bills had other problems, Coolidge reasoned, and he did not think that the federal government should intervene in the situation. So the farmers continued to suffer. But most voters remained supportive of Coolidge. Even though the president was considered a quiet person, he spoke often on the radio, appeared in a talking film, met with reporters regularly, and posed in funny costumes for photographers. He easily won election in 1924. Historians believe he could have won another term, too, in 1928. But Coolidge chose not to seek office. Some believed he was too saddened by the death of his teenaged son. Shortly after Coolidge became president, the boy had been playing tennis and slightly wounded his toe. The wound became infected. The infection spread to the boy's blood. A few days later, he died. Although Coolidge continued his presidency, he later said the joy had gone from the job. But when he decided not to seek re-election, he did not talk about his feelings. Instead, he simply wrote a note to reporters saying, "I do not choose to run for president in 1928. His Secretary of Commerce, Herbert Hoover, was elected instead. Coolidge retired to his home in Massachusetts and led a quiet private life. President Coolidge was well-liked by most Americans. Later presidents, including Ronald Reagan, sought to follow some of his economic policies. But many historians have questioned those policies. They say that Coolidge did not pay enough attention to the situation of farmers. And they say the stock market was rising too fast. 7 months after Coolidge left office, the U.S. economy collapsed. The country was still deep in the Great Depression when Coolidge passed away. He died, quietly, of course, during an afternoon nap at the age of 60. His will was but a single sentence. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.